This is Bob Enyart inviting you to our second Friday meeting on June 8th to hear scientists from the Creation Research Society speak at our Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship meeting, Friday, June 8th at 7 p.m. And if you'd like a visiting scientist to speak at your church on Sunday, June 10th, please contact the Creation Research Society. For more about our Friday night, June 8th meeting, which is at the Bethlehem Lutheran Church at Wadsworth and 21st, please just go to kgov.com, that's kgov.com, or call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker. Bob, you were on assignment last week, so we had to pre-record our Real Science Friday show.
That's right. What a fabulous science expedition it was, Fred.
So where were you on assignment?
Well, we went to Kentucky, a few of us, a supporter of this show, Real Science Friday. We interviewed a while back David Willis. And scientist Dr. Don Patton, who was in studio for a couple shows a year ago. And Fred, here's what I'd like to do. Dr. Don Patton is the world's leading expert on human footprints in stone. And out of courtesy to him, he's been working on all this for decades. I think we should postpone our report to give him the opportunity to publish first. And then we will talk about what he has revealed publicly and add our own information and photos and video and all that.
Okay, well, that sounds fair. Any idea when Dr. Patton might get around to that?
Well, he's forever climbing Mount Ararat.
Yeah.
He's just an extraordinary human being, a scientist, archaeologist. But I would think it'd be within a month or so.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we just know that there will be something when you or I say, Fred's on assignment. We mean you're on assignment.
You're on assignment somewhere.
That's right. So we have a big story about the gorilla genome. It turns out now the gorilla genome doesn't fit. But before we get to that, Fred, you had some latest news from Science Daily.
Yeah, Science Daily reported that they've got an encouraging treatment for muscular dystrophy using stem cells.
A brand new treatment on the horizon. Stem cells, but I thought they cause tumors, these embryonic stem cells. I thought it's all so terrible.
Yeah, but again, adult stem cells.
Adult stem cells where you don't have to kill the baby. You don't have to kill a little boy or a little girl, an embryo, a living human being, to harvest their body parts to treat people like Dr. Mengele in Nazi Germany. These are adult stem cells?
They're adult stem cells. And, you know, the beauty of adult stem cells also is that, you know, your body's not going to reject them. They'll take them from yourself. Mm-hmm. And so they took human stem cells and treated mice with muscular dystrophy and had encouraging results on muscle development and things mm-hmm. like that. So they're really encouraged by it. They call it a major breakthrough, and, you know, we'll see.
The clinical success on human beings with stem cells have been overwhelmingly with adult stem cells.
Yeah, not just overwhelming. It's like
exclusive,
78
perhaps.
To zero or something. Last I checked,
the clinical test,
the number of successful treatments using adult stem cells.
And you have professional experience with this as a software engineer. You worked on a big adult stem cell project.
Yeah,
so
we
thank
did.
You for doing that, by the way.
Yeah, we worked on an adult stem cell chamber because it's expensive to grow adult stem cells, and this thing made it a lot less expensive.
Well, that's tremendous. Imagine how many people that will help. Thank you for doing that, Fred.
It's a fun project.
One of the successes is where they took a certain rare form of blindness and painted the inside of a contact lens with the patient's own stem cells, adult stem cells, and they put in the contact lens, and within a few days, they restored sight. Now, that's only a rare form of blindness.
Wow.
But it gives us an idea of what's coming, and we don't have to kill babies, and it would be wrong to kill one baby to save the whole world. That would be wrong.
It would be. And again, embryonic stem cells don't work. Oftentimes they cause tumors and cancer.
And we know, I think, because we're personhood advocates and because we're Real Science Friday co-hosts, the conjunction there between the morality and the science of it, there is an enormous amount of regulatory behavior going on with embryonic stem cells. So much of the human genome is devoted to regulatory functions to build the embryo and fetology. And so when you take embryonic stem cells and you put them somewhere in a person's body, then those cells are just going wild.
Yeah.
And they're uncontrollable and they create tumors and add to the problem. So we should not work with embryonic stem cells, only adult stem cells. Not only do they work, even if they didn't work, it'd be wrong to work with embryonic, but not only do the adult stem cells work, we can do it with a pure conscience before God because we're not killing children.
Yeah, it's too bad they make it so political. Mm.
They do. But. Yeah, like California. They're broke and they're spending billions on embryonic stem cells.
Exactly. Yeah. Ridiculous.
All right. So, Fred, the big story for today's show, in fact, it should be the title of this program. Now the gorilla genome doesn't fit.
Okay. Gorillas. Gorilla genome sequence.
This throws yet another monkey wrench into the theory of evolution.
Right. So I think the title should be Real Science Friday. Now the gorilla genome doesn't fit.
The gorilla genome doesn't fit?
That's right.
Must we acquit?
Oh, that's the O.J. Simpson line, right, by Johnny Cochran. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. They say we creationists are guilty of misrepresenting science. But if this genome doesn't fit, they must acquit us, I think.
Well, they've been misrepresenting science ever since they latched on to evolution.
Yeah, what a great tragedy. And the theory of evolution is in shambles from every direction, from fossils to anatomy studies to the genetic tree that they wanted to build to show what evolved from what. They said, well, let's look at our genes. So, Fred, the gorilla genome is similar to the human genome in that it has billions of base pairs of amino acids, so billions of letters of the genetic code. And it turns out that, and this is from physorg.com, an evolutionary source, summarizing the results, and this was published on March 7th, the gorilla genome was announced that day, much of the human genome is more closely related to the gorilla than it is to the chimpanzee genome. And this is a major issue because they have said all along that humans are closer to chimps.
Than they are to gorillas.
Right. Chimps are our closest relative.
Wasn't that based on some study where they looked at some small sequence and they said there was similarity between chimps and humans? It was like...
Oh, yeah. 40 years ago, that Theodosius Dobzhansky, remember him? What is he famous for? He's famous for some... quote. You recall his quote?
Yeah, he's the guy that said nothing in biology makes sense except in light of evolution.
Okay. It turns out that's actually not true. Predictions he made way back 40 years ago turned out to be not valid. And in a way, here's another one, because he was looking at hemoglobin. And he said that if you compare the hemoglobin of chimps, humans, and gorillas, it turns out that the hemoglobin amino acid chains are about identical, but the gorilla is slightly off. It's one off.
One off, okay.
Out of 141 amino acids. So we're very similar to the chimp, but we're a little bit different from the gorilla. So look at that. That's just what Darwinists predict.
Well, yeah. And again, if you've got 3 billion roughly base pairs, and that's what, about 500?
That would be about 500,
let's say.
Out of 3 billion.
What a tiny percentage. It's like reading a book that said, the man crossed the street. Then you read another book, and it says, the man crossed the street. Hey, that's from the same author.
Right, right. Yeah.
And if it differs by one letter in the sentence, that must be from Tom Clancy, and the other one was from Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's so silly. They took such a small, tiny sample.
Yeah, so now what do they say, now that the gorilla genome is sequenced, what percentage of our human genome do they say is closer to the gorilla than to the chimpanzee?
15%.
15%? That's a huge chunk.
It is. What's 15% of 3 billion? That's a lot.
450 million.
Million base pairs.
And so they're extrapolating based on the 11,000 genes that they very carefully looked at, but they're saying 15%. So what that means is when they looked at 500 DNA letters with the hemoglobin, now they've looked at 20 million. So that's a lot more.
At least, yeah.
20 million out of, there's still a total of 3 billion. So when they look at 20 million, they're saying, well, 15% of the human genome is closer to the gorilla. That means that Dobzhansky, he just happened to hit something that was closer to the chimp, but he could have, by chance, hit on part of this millions of genetic letters that are closer between humans and gorillas than they are between humans and chimps.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was being selective even at that time. There's probably other sequences that weren't so similar, but it's just selectively choosing the evidence.
Selectively choosing. So here's what it comes down to. You know how they say DNA doesn't lie?
Yep.
Right? Don't prosecutors say that?
Yeah, well, you hear it on, I guess, these TV shows that my wife watches.
DNA doesn't lie. So here's what we've got. Let's say you have you and your brother.
Okay.
And you both share the same mom and dad. So your DNA is very similar. Then you have a cousin. And your cousin doesn't share the DNA directly from your mom and dad. It's, say, from your dad's brother and some other woman, of course.
Yeah.
Right? So his DNA is not going to be more similar than your own brother's is to you.
No, that would be shocking.
That would be strange. There'd be something wrong there.
Yeah.
You'd say, who are his parents? Who is he? And then what if you had a stranger? Now, the stranger whose parents are totally unrelated to your family and your aunts and uncles and all, his DNA is not going to be closer to you than your own brother's.
Yeah. If he had some chunk of 15% closer to me than my brother's, I would think he's really part of my family.
Yeah, you'd say,
more direct
were
relative.
You adopted at birth? Because DNA doesn't lie.
Yeah.
So this is what forensic scientists use to say, hey, you know what? The suspect is not the one who committed this murder, but it's a very close family relative. Well, why do you know it's a very close family relative? Because of the similarity in the DNA. So if it's a total stranger and their DNA is 50% closer than your brother's is, then something's going on. So what this means is some of the DNA says that we're closest to a chimp, and other parts of the DNA says that, and we're talking hundreds of millions of base pairs when you extrapolate, other parts of the DNA say we're closer to the gorilla, so that's building two different evolutionary trees.
Yeah, and so they can't make the claim that we're closer to chimpanzees than gorillas. It's totally thrown that idea out of the picture. In fact, one of the researchers said that, we noticed that the reconstruction of human evolution is more complex than we had anticipated. I mean, we see these kind of statements all the time.
It's shocking.
Yeah,
it's horrifying. With galaxies and sponge DNA and kangaroos, it's always shocking. But they have to try to fit this into the story. They have to. Well, the researchers point out that, in fact, the human ear is similar. It does look similar to the gorilla's ear, more similar than to a chimp's ear.
To a chimp, so hence we must be related.
We must be related.
Well, you know, I always knew when I first saw Star Trek and they showed Romulans and they had pointy ears, I knew they had to be related to Spock and Vulcans. And sure enough, they bring that whole angle into the show.
They
do. They've got Spock and the Vulcans.
The Romulans are related.
Yeah.
How about the Klingons and Worf?
Worf.
What are they related to?
They're related
to troglobiters. So this is all so superficial. Think of the platypus. We've talked not much, though. We should do a whole show on the platypus.
What an interesting creature.
But what did that evolve from? Because doesn't it have a furry body? Fur,
yeah,
not feathers.
Yeah, so fur.
Yet it has webbed feet with a duck-like bill.
So let's see. It didn't evolve from a... Does a duck have fur?
A duck doesn't have fur.
Doesn't have fur.
Right?
Okay.
But it has claws for burrowing. So it has webbed feet for swimming.
Swimming.
And a duck bill.
Okay.
But claws for burrowing.
Okay.
And it is a mammal.
Yeah. So it's a dog?
No.
No?
It's a mammal, but it doesn't bear live young.
It doesn't. It lays eggs, doesn't it?
It lays eggs.
Okay, so my dog is just now in my spot. He's really, he's a bird.
He's a bird. But it has a beaver-like tail. They used to say the platypus is a very primitive creature.
Yeah. They love those buzzwords like primitive and make primitive. It sounds like it's right. Ancient and it's evolved and
because
all that stuff.
Is it a duck? Is it a reptile? Is it a mammal? What did it evolve from? Did it evolve from all those to the platypus simultaneously?
When it was discovered, remember, they didn't even believe it. The English scientists thought it was a fraud or a hoax.
The British Museum still has the original carcass of it with the bill cut off with the scissor marks. Because they said this was sewn on there. When they said it was primitive, more recently they found out it has this amazing technique for locating prey. Do you recall that?
Yeah, something with electrolocation, something like that.
That's exactly right. The platypus, this primitive platypus, can locate its favorite food is shrimp, freshwater shrimp, and other prey. And it locates their electrical field. So that they found out that when their prey is hiding under mud or even under rocks, the platypus, they used to think it was swimming in the murky bottom of a pond or a lake and looking for prey, just stumbling upon it. Now they know that it can sense the electrical field of a shrimp, and it digs up the shrimp and eats the shrimp.
Wow.
That's real primitive.
That is.
Fred, they used to say, well, the platypus, you see, it evolved in this unique way because in Australia, it was separated from the rest of the world, and that explains it, as though that explains it. But now they have found fossil evidence of the platypus in South America, and that's not part of Australia.
No, it's not.
So that threw that whole superficial story into turmoil.
Yeah. Well, I guess if they had said Arkansas, it may have been more believable.
Yeah. It's all so bizarre. It's a story that they tell, but as the evidence comes in, and we've been talking about this evidence, Fred, it turns out that it's not just gorillas that now throw a monkey wrench, pardon the pun, into the story of human evolution, but it's everything. It's kangaroos, and it's worms, and it's sponges, and I think we should remind ourselves of some of what's been discovered in these different areas.
Well, Bob, I just remembered before we go to that, the octopus eyes are real similar to ours. So that means we're very closely related to octopuses, right?
Well,
because if the gorilla ear is going to be similar to ours, then hey.
Right. And what's more sophisticated and significant, the superficial shape of an ear or the functioning of an eye? And so the octopus eye is very much like the human eye. And they say, oh, it's convergent. So why isn't it just convergent with the gorilla ear and the human ear?
Yeah. Maybe we're closely related to worms.
I think so. I think sponges are 70% human, personally.
70%. And we've talked about that before. The sponge has 70% similar DNA, right?
Yeah.
What about the Brillo pad?
The Brillo pad. And a banana. And it's all too much. So let's go through this and think about it, because the genome history is falling apart. That's why there is an exodus of scientists who are evolutionists who are rejecting Darwin's tree of life, saying you could put these things in an orderly path, because when one gene tells one evolutionary story and another gene tells another, and then you have thousands that tell contradictory stories, you don't have three different fathers and nine different mothers.
Yeah. You can't come up with their naturalistic mechanism.
No. So let's start with, where should we start with? How about kangaroos?
Okay, let's hop right into that one.
Okay.
Okay.
What did they find out in Australia's Kangaroo Genomic Center? What did they find out when they decoded and they published the kangaroo genome?
Well, they found 20,000 genes, kangaroo genes.
About the same number as in humans.
Yeah, roughly the same number.
Right.
And they were really very similar, almost all the same, in the same order
in
many cases.
Well, here's Jenny Graves, who's the director of their Genomic Center for the Kangaroo, and she said there are great chunks of the human genome sitting right there in the kangaroo genome. She says there's largely the same number of genes, and a lot of them are in the same order.
So what they're going to have to do in the high school textbooks is they're going to have to show this little amoeba turning into a kangaroo-like human, turning into a kangaroo-like human, and then finally human.
Right. So forget about chimps being our closest relatives.
Yeah, it's the kangaroo.
Turns out the kangaroo, the kangaroo is awfully close.
Well, it might explain trampolines, you know, our desire to jump on trampolines.
And
you know,
we have one
at our home.
We're
onto something here.
Okay. And it turns out that New Scientist, they had a reason for their cover story a while back. You could read all about it in excerpts at realsciencefriday.com. But it's Darwin was wrong about the tree of life, because it turns out that now that they have carefully studied the genetics of thousands of species, they say more than half are not the product of a biological pathway represented by a tree, or a bush for that matter.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. It's a mess. And how about sponges, Fred?
Well, the sequencing of the Great Barrier Reef sponge genome showed, according to the co-authors of the study, that sea sponges share almost 70% of human genes. 70% of the Great Barrier Reef sponge. So when you go to the zoo and you see that sign that says, you know, in the monkey cage, hey, this is your relative, this is your cousin, blah, blah, this and that. Next time you go snorkeling, they should have signs underwater. This is your cousin.
This is your cousin. So the platypus, the kangaroo, the sponge, the banana, Fred, these things are all telling a story. DNA doesn't lie. They're telling a story that's different from Darwin's tree of life. And Fred, that 70% similarity between humans and sponges, what is it all about? Well, that peer-reviewed journal Nature tells us about the sponge DNA, that it includes genes that code for muscle tissue and neurons. Fred,
wow.
Sponges don't have a nervous system.
I didn't think so.
They don't have muscles? They don't have brains.
They
don't have muscles. There's no muscular system there. So what are the genes doing in a sponge to code for muscles and neurons? This is so contradictory to Darwinism that we are seeing exactly why evolution is in crisis, a theory in crisis, because DNA doesn't lie, and if it doesn't fit, you have to acquit.
Yeah.
Fred, that gorilla genome, 15%, hundreds of millions of these DNA letters in the human genome are closer to the gorilla than the chimp. It doesn't fit, and therefore you have to acquit the creationists who are accused of misrepresenting science.
And I think we know who's misrepresenting science. I like what one of the researchers said here from the biomedical research in Cambridge.
Yeah.
Though we think of a sponge as a simple creature, they think of it that way because that's how they try to push these things.
Right.
Whose skeleton we take to the bathtub, it has a lot of the major biochemical and developmental pathways we associate with complex functions in humans and other more complex animals. I mean, she still had to get in her evolutionary bent by saying more complex animals.
Right.
These animals are extremely complex.
Yeah, because a sponge is made out of billions of cells, and we now know that each cell is wildly complicated.
Yep.
And here's what I think is going on. When God created Fred, just like software engineers, I think God worked with the genome of millions of species the way software engineers, like you are one, work with code. Do you guys have code libraries
Absolutely.
Of function?
You don't want to reinvent the wheel in a lot of cases. It's conservation. It makes a lot of sense.
Right.
It's a good design.
So you have these coding libraries. And I think God did this. He had these genetic blueprints. He had these massive, like, object-oriented programming and all. You don't reinvent the wheel. If you're going to sort, you don't reinvent a sort function every time you have to sort. When God is designing these millions of creatures, Fred, I think he takes a genetic library, a toolbox full of genetic functions, and he says, okay, from this, I could make a banana, and I could make a kangaroo, and I could make a bird. And then he takes another genomic library, and he says, from this, I think I will make a sponge, and I'll make a worm, and I'll make a human being, even. So that's why it turns out, even with worms, Fred, they're horrified, I mean horrified, the evolutionists, when they decoded a simple worm they found that it has 20,000 genes, which is about the same number as human beings have.
20,000 genes in a worm, and they call it simple, but, you know, a worm, again, is vastly more complex than anything man's ever invented.
So humans have about 20,000, worms have about 20,000 genes, and Fred, they sequenced this marine worm, and it has been reported in all the Science and Nature publications that these marine worms are more closely related to humans than are mollusks and insects, and they thought the marine worm was the common ancestor of man and insects.
Yeah, they titled their article, A Can of Worms.
A Can of Worms.
So this simple so-called flatworm, it's too similar to humans to be that far back in evolutionary history.
Yeah, they said the missing link has gone missing because this worm, they knew,
yeah,
was the link between man and insects, this worm.
Well, you know, there's still a lot of evolutionists who still cling to this idea about the worms. They're in the Flat Worm Society.
That is so funny, Fred. Just like the Flat Earth Society believes in evolution. Nature Magazine, their article about this, evolutionists use words like we're alarmed. There's a vehemence. They said this is the most politically fraught paper I've ever written, said one genetic researcher, Max Telford. It is such a problem for them, Fred, that wherever they look, the genes don't tell the story that Darwinism predicted it would tell. Remember the Y chromosome compared from the chimp to the human
chromosome? Oh, yeah. Wasn't it, like, amazingly different? I mean, they were shocked and horrified, if I recall.
They actually said that they were horrified by the difference between the human and chimp Y chromosome. It turns out, and they use the word shock, and they say that they're horrendously different from each other. Turns out that the chimp's Y chromosome has only 66% of the genes that we do. So, Fred, we're talking about the kind of difference as between a sponge and a human.
Wow.
And when you're looking at worms in humans and kangaroos in humans, the differences in being so arbitrary to say, well, we look at cytochrome C, and that looks more similar to the pattern we predict. Okay, but look at a million other things, and the pattern is the opposite.
Yeah, selective choosing, again, what they want to show their audience. It's deceptive. It's an illusion.
Yeah.
They paint these illusions for people to buy into this goofy idea that we're related to chimps.
So Real Science Friday, now the gorilla genome doesn't fit.
And we now must acquit.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. Creationists are guilty of misrepresenting? No, it's the evolutionist, the Darwinist. Because God is the creator and the evidence is everywhere.
Everywhere.
And his name is Jesus Christ. As John wrote, he created everything that was created. Thank you, Fred Williams. RealScienceFriday.com. God bless you guys.
Would you like to study the Bible but don't really know where to start? Bob Inyart's seminar on hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, will help you to study and understand the Bible on a whole new level. Hermeneutics, Tools for Studying the Bible, is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.